Hello, America, and all of our listeners all around the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, and most Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Logi. Say hi to good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yes, so this episode is going to be for September 2nd, 2023, first show of the month. And wow, you can definitely finally feels like summer is ending. Although that had a lot to do with the fact that we had a hurricane come through recently. It's been basically in the 80s for the last couple days, which is fantastic for me because, it means I can, walk down to my mailbox without breaking a sweat. But yeah, it's just in general, as you can probably guess, we had Hurricane Idalia come in through this week. And we'll be talking about that a little later because, of course, it didn't just hit Georgia. It hit pretty much all the Southeast. But as for me, it was basically a big nothing burger. We got a little bit of wind, mostly some rain, and then that was about it. Mostly what happened is all of the really nasty stuff was like south of us. On top of that, of course, we've got, for example, we got some other stories today. We have another celebrity death to talk about. More shenanigans involving former President Trump. We've also got some archaeology news that's actually pretty interesting. And we also got a bunch of entertainment news, including the fact that Disney actually has finished a series that they produced and put a bunch of money in, but they are currently refusing to air it. And I have a number of guesses as to why. And, of course, we've also got some trailers to talk about as well. All that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off, as always, as tradition. Chris, tell us what you've been up to this week.
We had a pretty good weather week last week with some days in, like, the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty nice. And then that is going to end here as we are heading back into the upper 80s and lower 90s for the next mm-hmm. week. We're walking back into hell here.
Yep.
For at least another week, unfortunately.
Mm.
So that's not great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we get some rain to maybe break that once more. Maybe we'll see if that sticks.
Mm-hmm.
But for things I've been doing, I started watching One Piece on Netflix,
mm-hmm.
The new live action show.
Mm-hmm.
It's been pretty good so far. It is, so they are covering from the beginning up through Arlong Park,
mm-hmm.
Which is a lot in the show, but here they kind of do a pretty good job of condensing things a little bit. Mm-hmm. Each episode is about an hour long,
mm-hmm.
8 episodes, so they kind of give themselves a decent amount of
mm-hmm.
landing there, so... they do take their, even for how fast it's kind of going, it's cutting out a lot of filler stuff, essentially. So, early on you get the little backstory of Luffy and him running into Kobe and them kind of going off to the Marine Island where Nami and Zoro are at, and particularly freeing Zoro as they go and search for a map for the Grand Line as they try to head out that way, of course, kind of keep running into side things. Where I'm at right now is them meeting up with Usopp and dealing with the fallout of that whole thing that's going on there. So that is interesting to see. And yeah, like all the cast seems pretty good so far. And they do backstory stuff, but not too much. It's not exhausting in the way that One Piece and the anime has done it.
Yeah.
Where you can get, multiple episodes just going through, Zoro's getting humiliated by this girl as a kid, and that's kind of driven him to be the swordsman he is.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's stuff going on there. It's like Usopp dealing with his own thing for that. And, yeah, it's all done pretty well so mm-hmm. far. So I am looking forward to seeing how it ends and how they set up for, you know, a new season here.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's pretty well done.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I definitely recommend checking that out.
Mm.
So I'm curious to see how people that haven't played or watched the anime sort of take to it.
Yeah.
Because it is, it's a bit out there.
Oh, yeah.
For a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
They generally do pretty good with character designs, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah, like the buggy stuff, they don't dwell on it too much. It's like two mm-hmm. episodes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like the long drawn out thing. You don't see the guy that has the big dog, I think it was, that. It's like an animal tamer, essentially. You don't really see much of him. Well, there's Mary, who runs the shipyard for Kaya on Usopp's Island, that kind of thing. You do see some of these more interesting people there. So, yeah, One Piece seems good so far. Looking forward to watching the rest of that. The other thing I watched, Ahsoka, the new Star Wars show. Three episodes of that is up right now. So I've watched that, and that seems pretty good so far, though I have not seen the Clone Wars CG show. Do really have a great idea of who everybody is outside of like a couple of characters there. So that's maybe the thing where it's like, maybe I should go and watch all of the Clone Wars stuff and see like what all that is about. So I do think they have a playlist of sorts of like, here's key episodes you should watch. And I don't really think I'll do that, but that seems pretty good so far. And back to watching more Columbo, as I am season 2 now. I think nearing the end, probably like episode 5 or 6, I forget. So I have a few more to go, but I just finished an episode with Leonard Nimoy in it. He plays a doctor who potentially tries to kill or kills somebody to keep them from revealing his secret attempt to kill somebody else kind of thing. But it is fun to see him in a non-Spock role. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a couple years before Star Trek really started. So kind of fun to see him there. One of the previous episodes was set in England, where they send Columbo off to England to help Scotland Yard or something.
Mm-hmm.
A very weird episode because he, loses his luggage as he gets to the airport.
Yeah.
Arrives from the airport kind of thing and doesn't get that till like before he has to leave
mm-hmm.
again kind of thing. And dealing with some theater people, which is a thing that he has a particular passion for, like theater and classical music. So that's a fun whole thing there. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's Columbo. Still enjoying that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
For games, I've been playing some more Baldur's Gate 3. I have finished up the Grove area, at least all I could do at the time. Mm-hmm. Talking to everybody, looting everything I could.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to deal with a big storyline there that I have to go to some goblin camp to potentially find out if he's still alive or not, to stop a whole nasty situation going on back at this other area kind of thing. So working my way through that, which then I found a big underground cave or basement cave area kind of thing that was fun to go through. I just have a shit ton of healing potions now, so everybody on my crew has like a good 4 of those, 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. So we're all pretty set to be able to heal up, even if spells are not available for that stuff. Mm-hmm. So still liking that a lot. And the other game I've been playing some more of is Power Wash Simulator,
mm-hmm.
as they just put out a big update. Adding some new maps, as well as adding gyro support for the Switch and PS4 and PS5 mm-hmm. versions, so that you can kind of get a bit more of a of a better way to control the thing on a non on a controller without a mouse. So that is a fun thing. I'm still kind of trying to dial in the controls a little bit, but I'm basically on the last map on PS5, the the big hole building structure thing that I'm working my way through. So that's been a good time because that can be, that was starting to be a bit of a chore before they added that. So I was like glad I could just cut through some of the crap there, kind of make it a little bit easier. So there's that. And then the new maps, haven't started on that stuff just yet, but looking forward to that. So, yeah, that's been pretty much all I've been doing. So, Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I finished Blasphemous 2 and went back so I could get both endings. Much like with the first game, there's like two different endings that can happen depending on what you've done or what, or rather what you haven't done. In the first one. In the original game, you had to go through this sort of series of events that were basically battles that had to be done. They were like some of the most hard battles in the game, but you actually had to go out and search for them because they were hidden. Because otherwise, if you try to, you know, ascend the Mountain of Ash at the end of the game where the throne at the top is, you end up just sort of sinking into it. But if you do that, you get up there and you get to fight the final boss. Well, in this case, you can fight the final boss either way, but you have to get a couple of different miniatures to put on your little altarpiece that's on your back, and you have to put them in a specific sequence and in a specific place because there's like eight open areas total on there. And if you do that, then you go up to fight the last boss, then you end up getting the good ending. If you get a bad ending, it basically just sort of starts the whole cycle all over again. But I finished that, and yeah, that game was very entertaining. I quite liked it. My review is on Smash Pad for anybody who wants to read it. I quite enjoyed it, even though there are some issues I have with it compared to the first one. Mostly, the boss fights weren't quite as visually spectacular as they were in the first one. But there were still some really neat stuff to see. Other than that, yes, I'm finally getting ready to play Baldur's Gate 3 for real this time. I've got the, you know, the Enhanced Edition that I bought, the Deluxe Edition. I went ahead and bought that. So, you know, I get to play it a couple days early. Than a lot of other people. And yeah, I had to like go ahead, clear out, you know, parts of my, part, you know, my memory and stuff. Cause those, it's a big game. It's like 150 gigs, for, you know, to take up that hard drive. So I had to delete some stuff, but yeah, I am legitimately like really excited. I'll be playing it for real tonight. Before I go to bed. And yeah, I'm genuinely excited. I am aware that apparently, as it is right now, it's slightly glitchy. Not like in a game breaker type way, but like there are some visual glitches here and there where it's like it's noticeable that they had to do some kind of visual downgrade. But I also know that, you know, they're going to be working at this thing overtime pretty much. And apparently Larian Studios themselves are actually going to be handling, they are handling the, you know, the ports themselves instead of, you know, hiring it out to a third party company, which is a good idea on their part, I think. And it also means that, you know, they're going to be fixing stuff going forward. Honestly, I'm just kind of interested to see like how this game visually evolves over time. But yeah, so I'm finally getting a chance to do that. And man, I am kind of happy. finally get to play this game because man, I have, oh, the want has grown. But yeah, other than that, nothing much to discuss. My usual reading, And yeah, like I said, we weathered the storm, even though it wasn't much of a storm for us. Although, that didn't mean that there weren't still some things I had to do. So for those who don't know, I work at a grocery store. And one of the things we had to do is the night before the storm was supposed to hit in, on Wednesday, you know, because the storm was supposed to roll in Wednesday morning. The night before, we had to spend a few hours prepping the store, which meant that we had to get a bunch of like buckets out to the areas where we know that there are leaks in the roof, just on the off chance things don't accidentally flood or whatever. We also had to put a bunch of mats out in certain areas to make sure that, you know, if water does end up coming in, it doesn't, and we can like hold it back somewhat. We also had to, I particularly spent like 3 hours outside, bringing in all of the various carts, that are left outside by the public. We had to bring all of them in into the store, even the ones that we usually leave outside because we typically don't really have much room for them. We had to bring them all into the store because of the off chance that if we end up getting, you know, heavy winds or anything, we didn't want the, you know, any of the smaller ones to be like, you know, causing any kind of damage or whatever. And then of course, on top of all of that, we also had to deal with, you know, the customers themselves, because a lot of customers were also doing the same. They were coming to get, you know, bread and milk and whatever, just in case, you know, power goes out and they're going to be on their own for a little while. Cause I gotta remind people, you know, a good 6 or 7 years ago, we had a tropical storm come here through Georgia and it basically wrecked a bunch of it, and a lot of us were out of power for like a week. So, yeah. Oh, and did I mention that while I was doing a lot of this, it was also raining? Yeah, so that was also fun. But yeah, so that's what I was up to this week. You got anything you want to add before we move on, Chris?
Nope.
All right. In that case, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, Chris, you're a bit of a movie buff, right?
Yeah, to a degree.
Yeah, to a degree. So, are you, like, one of those dudes who, like, appreciates, like, B-movies? Like exploitation films?
I like cheesy movies.
Yeah, I like cheesy movies, too. Cheesy movies, good, bad movies. Yeah. I love those. Those are a lot of fun. Usually when there's a movie where it's like you can actually tell like there's effort put into it, but the movie still just for whatever reason ends up being complete garbage, you know, it works. Or like, you know, they're trying you can tell that they're trying, but like the budget isn't there or the talent just isn't there, and it doesn't work. Or, and then of course you got those types of movies where it's like they thought it sounded like a good idea, and then it ends up making no damn sense whatsoever. But, you know, with exploitation movies, you know, you've got your various, like, sub-genres. Like, you've got the sexploitation movies, like old, like, Russ Meyer movies, or you got the, you know, mondo-sploitation movies, which are basically movies that are supposed to be shot, like, serious documentaries, but they're usually have like very lurid subject matter. But over the last few years, even though like and the movies in this type of genre I'm talking about over the last few years, they go as far back as like the 1960s. But over the last few years, there's been a new sort of subgenre that's been sort of coming into existence with, you know, film scholars in the exploitation, you know, medium of film. And it has a couple of different labels. Some call it the black tank top movie. Others call it the ego exploitation film. And usually, what these are is these are movies where someone who is like has absolutely no talent or any real, you know, history in the film business or any experience in the film business, or really doesn't have any really good idea of like how a movie is actually being made. And yet, for whatever reason, they decide one day that either they're going through like a midlife crisis or they're just bored or whatever. They decide, I'm going to make me a movie. And so they not only decide to make a movie, they decide to like take most of the key parts of filmmaking to themselves. So these are usually films where the lead actor is also the writer, the director, the producer. Sometimes they also, you know, do the score for the film. And sometimes they end up making just one of these movies that then like goes into obscurity before becoming a cult classic. Other times they make a bunch of movies. And every single one of them is absolutely terrible. But what separates these from other movies of this kind is that, one, the lack of experience, and two, the fact that none of these movies really get any kind of real, you know, box office success. They only become popular through, you know, midnight screenings and stuff like that. So, for example, this, first of all, you know, the concept of a person writing, directing, producing, and starring in the film doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a bad movie. You know, the movie that's considered to be the greatest in American cinema, Citizen Kane, was all written, directed, produced, and starred Orson Welles. You know, now it may have had issues when it first came out, but even back then, people could recognize its greatness. This also doesn't include someone like Edward D. Wood Jr., who famously made movies like Glenn or Glenda, Plan 9 from Outer Space, stuff like that. Because even though all of his movies were terrible, he actually did have like experience in filmmaking, and he knew how to actually make a movie. It's just that he was so lazy or lackadaisical about the filmmaking process that he never was able to really make a good, coherent film. No, we're talking about guys like, probably the most famous of these, of all of them, is probably Tommy Wiseau, who famously had some weird, mysterious past, suddenly shows up in Hollywood, tries to be an actor, completely fails, decides to make his own movie, and that, of course, ends up becoming The Room, which becomes a cult classic because of just how terrible it is. There's also Champagne and Bullets by John DeHart that was made in the early 90s, which is infamous for the fact that he managed to rope in a couple of legit B-movie actors like Wings Hauser, and the fact that he is a completely uncharismatic individual with a movie that makes no damn sense, where he does all of the music himself, and it's bad. If you ever do a chance, watch the episode of Weird Movies with Mark, where he did a whole episode on this movie, and it is hysterical, because this man was like just this bored attorney who decided to self-finance his own movie, and he decided to make this, and it's garbage. And then, you know, the probably the earliest example of this is a movie that came out. Well, I say came out. It was originally made in 1976, got shown a little bit, and then got buried until just a couple of years ago. A movie called The Astrologer, which was written, directed, produced, and starred a guy named Craig Denny, who was apparently a professional astrologer before he decided to make this film. And it's not only badly written, it's also infamous for the fact that it uses a bunch of copyrighted music by the Moody Blues that they never got permission to use. But I want to talk about the guy who I think epitomizes this example, this particular genre, more than anybody else. He has written, directed, produced, and starred in now 6 major feature-length films, and every single one of them are derivative of the same themes that he has used pretty much since the very first one, and they are all absolutely terrible. I'm talking, of course, about the man, the myth, the legend that is Neil Breen. Now, Chris, have you heard that name before, Neil Breen?
Maybe, I don't.
Okay.
Not noticeably.
Okay, okay. I'll tell you who this guy is. So Neil Breen is, professionally, he is a architect and a real estate agent out of Nevada. And he's apparently a really successful one. So successful that he was able to, like, self-finance his first three movies. But essentially, he decided at some point, because he had like a midlife crisis or whatever, he decided to start making his own movies. And he came up with a way to, like, sort of, it's one of those movies that's like real, he makes movies that are really super low budget. You know, he does most of the cinematography itself. He also does most of the catering, the set design, stuff like that. A lot of his movies are mostly like shot or in and around his property. There's like a couple of rooms and like a swimming pool that show up more than once, that you'll notice constantly appearing in his films. He'll also do things like repeat certain shots. And the other thing he does is he uses a crap ton of stock footage to try and fill out the running time of his film so that it'll be about 90 minutes. But every single one of his films essentially have the sort of same kind of themes. They're all around, based around the lead character, which is usually played by him, who is usually the absolute best at everything he does. So much so that he comes off as nigh omnipotent. And in fact, in one movie, his second film, he actually just straight up plays God. though in this case, God is like an alien being who is apparently making planets to run experiments or whatever. But his first movie came out in the early 2000s. It was called Double Down. And it was basically about a guy who is like a former fighter pilot and secret agent who was enhanced through government biopsies and operations to make him, you know, faster, stronger, and smarter than all the others. He's got links to all kinds of satellites and stuff, and he's, you know, able to, like, keep watch on all the world's communications through a pair of laptops and a satellite dish that he's got poking out of the back of his beat-up old car. He is apparently either, depending on how you look at the film, he's either trying to stop a terrorist attack that's going to hit Las Vegas, or he is specifically the one that is trying to cause it. The movie isn't particularly clear about it. And on top of that, he also comes across this rock that he gets in hold that he thinks is magic and helps cure people of cancer. Yeah, it's weird. It's also probably the worst film of all of them because he uses more stock footage than any other in that movie than any other that he used. So much so that his films, which are usually even on the best of them, are nigh incomprehensible. This one is especially so. But then after that, he followed up his second film in 2009, which is called I Am Here, .. Now. Which is the Alien God movie I talked about. And in that one is particularly infamous because it brings up another thing that it starts another trend in his movie, in his films, that is about the sort of themes that he constantly harps over and over on in every single film that he's ever made, which is government corruption, financial malfeasance, and corporate greed. Which is like, okay, those are great things to make movies about. The problem is, he doesn't write dialogue the way that normal people speak. There's a scene in it where there's like a couple of, I think they're lobbyists, supposedly, who were like in this car talking about how, you know, these like, because of our lobbying efforts that, you know, that renewable energy fund going through Congress will fail next month. It's more profitable for us if Americans go without them at this time, you know, stuff like that. There's also this like side plot of these two women who recently lost their jobs working for like an environmental advocacy nonprofit. And it takes like less than 10 seconds for one of them to suggest the other that they should just immediately switch to prostitution. Like, it's really stupid. And it's like, you get the feeling Neil Breen doesn't really know how humans actually act. But the film that followed that up was 2012's Fateful Findings, which is the one that's probably the one that made him most famous, because it has this infamously memeable scene in it. In this one, he's playing a guy who, years when he was a child, he made friends with this girl, where they found a magic rock inside a little box. And then she moves out of town and he never sees her again. He grows up, even though they both meet again later, and it's very clear that age definitely hit someone worse than the other. Let's just put it that way. He ends up suffering. He gets hit by a Rolls Royce while he's walking across the street. And when he comes back, he discovers that this rock he has returned to him. And now he can use it to use magical powers. Now, the side to this is that he's also become a successful author. And while he's writing his third book, he's actually hacking into government and corporate websites so that he can expose their secrets. And this movie is infamous because there's also this side plot of, like, their neighbors who are apparently going through some stuff because the husband is, like, a drunk and everything. And he's apparently more focused on his Ferrari that he's, you know, doing stuff on over his wife. And so his wife finally decides to just shoot him. She at first she's like, I'm going to shoot this damn car full of holes. And she ends up shooting him. And then she freaks out and their daughter walks in and she, like, tries to claim that he killed himself. And then so Neil Breen's character comes in and he's like, Jim. And he's like holding him in his arms. And, like, he rubs the dude's blood on his face for some reason. And then he, in the most wooden way you could possibly do, he goes, I cannot believe you committed suicide. I just cannot believe you committed suicide. Why would you do it? Why would you commit suicide? It is one of the most horribly acted things I've ever seen. And it's amazing. If you ever get a chance, watch, you know, retrospectives of it. It's great. And after that, he did a movie called Pass Through. I'm going to just sort of do these sort of shorter because they're not really worth talking about, more or less. But Pass Through, he's an omnipotent godlike being. In this case, he's an AI from far in the future coming back who decides that he's going to eliminate 300 million people from the planet that he considers bad. Then there was another movie called Twisted Pair, came out a couple years later, about a dude who's a secret agent and his twin brother who were both at one point picked up, abducted by aliens, and made into basically superheroes, but one of them sort of failed out and is lost. And then there's a movie that is actually his first sequel, and that one's called Cave, The Tortured Crossing. I haven't seen that one yet because it hasn't been done wide release just yet. But yeah, if you ever get a chance, you know, try and watch, or at least watch retrospectives of this dude's films, because he is... it's amazing. They're so terribly made, and he is such a terrible actor, and yet there's something just glorious about it. There really is. But anyway, yeah, that is Neil Breen. He is the master of the egosploitation film, and that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, yes, with that, it is now time for the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first major asshole of the week is Senator Tommy Tuberville, who, because of his being a prick, has put on hold military promotions, and he may put up to 650 officers in limbo by the end of 2023.
Yeah, this is just the continuation of his just bullshit he's been pushing for the past year or so. The Pentagon says there are 301 generals and admirals whose nominations have been placed in limbo because of an indefinite hold by Senator Tommy Tuberville from Alabama, who wants the military to change its policy of reimbursing service members for travel to get reproductive care, including abortions.
Yep.
And, like, he's tried to say, like, well, I'm not holding up anything, and it's like, bullshit, man. Mm-hmm. And they say by the end of the year, it could end up being up to about 650 generals and admirals who need Senate confirmation before they can assume their jobs. Any single senator could put a hold on nominations under Senate rules. And he has stepped up to be that man.
Yep.
The department has 83 three- and four-star nominations pending for positions already vacated or due to rotate within the next 150 days. Yep. Because of this blanket hold, for the first time in the history of the department, three of our military services are operating without Senate-confirmed leaders.
Mm-hmm.
This is unprecedented, unnecessary, and unsafe.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Navy, the Army, and the Marine Corps are without top leaders because of this hold.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, by the end of September, General Mark Milley, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, will retire by law. He cannot be extended. The officer nominated to replace him, Air Force General C.K. Brown, is also awaiting approval by the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they say 61 of those officers are unable to assume their new positions. More than 40 officers who have been selected to the grade of one or two stars will assume the duties of the higher grade or remaining in their current grade until they are confirmed. Generals and admirals are not authorized to have their date of rank backdated, so each of those officers will not receive a pay increase while they're performing the duties of a higher grade. In addition, 25 officers have had their retirements deferred until the holds have been lifted or December 31st, 2023, whichever occurs first. And now, yeah, now they're just political pawns in Tommy Tuberville's game of stupidity here.
Yep, so that's happened. And now we got the state of Alabama. Which, I mean, I think this is like times a thousand. This has showed up in the show. They want to try out their brand new execution technique on a death row inmate by having him breathe nitrogen.
Yeah. This is, I think, something that no states are doing at this point. But they are trying to get the state Supreme Court to allow them to institute the first ever use of nitrogen hypoxia, a controversial and untested method, in an execution. The Attorney General requested the court to authorize the date for the execution of Kenneth Eugene Smith, who was convicted in 1996 in a murder for hire. His execution was previously scheduled for November 17, 2022. However, he had opposed being executed by lethal injection and petitioned in court for nitrogen hypoxia to be used instead. Yeah, nitrogen hypoxia is a form of inert gas asphyxiation, which a person is forced to breathe pure nitrogen until they die. When nitrogen makes up about 70% of the air in Earth's atmosphere, mostly mixed with sufficient amounts of oxygen for people to breathe it. And yeah, back in November, the U.S. Supreme Court had overruled a stay of execution for Smith and granted the state the ability to use lethal injection, but corrections officers could not complete the execution before the death warrant expired due to problems inserting an IV into Smith's veins. And that's sort of the big problem with a lot of the traditional means of execution with lethal injection is that doctors are not allowed to perform them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's against their, you know, general ethics.
Yeah, it goes against the Hippocratic Oath, yeah.
Yeah. And the people that they end up getting to do it, you know, have little to no experience in doing it. So their ability to, you know, find the veins and properly do it, you know, are few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up getting a lot of these getting botched in some way. Either causing a lot of pain for the person and not killing them, or missing it, being unable to do it entirely, all that kind of stuff. And that's why, you know, it's not really a good thing to do anyway, because it costs a lot of money to get the drugs for that. Nitrogen might be cheaper on that front, but also, again, this is untested. It's claiming to be painless and all that, but you know, it's not something I think that should be intentionally used for executing people. It's just by these states that just want to kill these people really badly. They are finding other ways to do it. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Alabama is one of those states that just wants to kill people. They're on death row, and it's not like it's cheaper to just leave them there.
Yeah. Next up, A judge has ruled that Rudy Giuliani is liable for defaming two Georgia election officials.
Adding more to his...
Yeah.
Yeah. The two that were... whose names were circulating and, you know, all that, they were able to get this decision here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the judge issued a default judgment against Giuliani, writing in an opinion Wednesday that he has refused to comply with his discovery obligations and thwarted plaintiffs Ruby mm-hmm. Freeman and Wandria Shea Moss, their procedural rights to obtain any meaningful discovery in this case. So it's basically like, well, we're just going to... the decision means Giuliani is liable for defamation, intentional infliction of emotional distress, mm-hmm. civil conspiracy, and punitive damage claims, and a trial will be held to decide how much he may need to pay Freeman and Moss.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, you just be like, you're obviously guilty of this because you're not cooperating with any of the... or needs to investigate this stuff. So
mm-hmm.
now it's time to figure out how much you owe them. And it's probably not going to be cheap.
Nope.
So congratulations, Rudy. You've got more legal problems in Georgia.
Yes, you do. And we do not screw around down here, so have fun with that. And last on that list, two of the former leaders of the Proud Boys were sentenced to a combined 32 years in prison for seditious conspiracy and other crimes during the January 6th insurrection. Another one even got 10 years in prison.
Yeah. The two that got the big ones include Joseph Biggs and Zachary Rell,
mm-hmm.
who were sentenced to 17 years and 15 years, respectively, in prison for seditious yep. conspiracy and other crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. Biggs helped lead efforts by the Proud Boys to take over the U.S. Capitol on January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
Rell, also a former military service member, was mm-hmm. leader of the Philadelphia chapter of the Proud Boys.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The judge also sentenced Biggs to 3 years of supervised release mm-hmm. and a ban on any interactions with organizations that advocate violence against the government.
Mm-hmm.
For Rell... the judge said he, Biggs, and others participated in a national disgrace that contributed to the ruin of America's tradition of a peaceful transfer of power. The sentence is far below the 33 years for Biggs and the 30 years for Rell sought by prosecutors, so about half of what they were seeking.
Yeah.
Both penalties are also below the most severe sentence of 18 years given to Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, there's still other Proud Boys that are getting... sentenced here. I think Enrique Tarrio was supposed to be sentenced this week, but they delayed that for a little bit longer. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's fun to see. The 10-year one goes to who is this here? Pezzola, Dominic Pezzola.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the one that smashed through a window to the U.S. Capitol with a police riot shield, allowing the first wave of rioters to storm the building as members of Congress were being evacuated.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's a fun thing here.
Yep.
There might be another one here. Ethan Nordine, a Proud Boy from Washington State who took over leading the group after a long time, Proud Boys chairman Enrique Tarrio was arrested on his way to Washington, D.C. days before the January 6th riot, was sentenced to 18 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's tied with Stuart Rhodes for the longest in connection with the insurrection. So,
yep.
Great news all around.
Mm-hmm. All right. But we do have a hero of the week, and that is the court that ruled that the Texas age verification law, as it violates the First Amendment. It was specifically because Pornhub had brought this court, and this judge ruled in their favor, and there was a bunch of like risks that these people did not consider when they were making this legislation. But I mean, it was also supposed to be performative; like they didn't really give a crap. So,
yeah, it was supposed to go into effect September 1st. So,
mm-hmm.
yesterday, porn sites would have been required to use reasonable age verification methods to verify yeah. that an individual attempting to access the material is 18 years of age or older.
Yeah.
In addition, pornography sites would have been forced to display a Texas Health and Human Services warning mm-hmm. in at least 14-point font. One such warning was specified to read, pornography increases the demand for prostitution, child exploitation, and child pornography, along with a national toll-free number for people with mental health disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Greg Abbott signed that into law on June 12th.
Yep.
But yeah, August 31st, Senior U.S. District Judge David Ezra wrote, the court finds that HB 1181 is unconstitutional on its face.
Mm-hmm.
The ruling enjoined Angela Colmenero, acting Attorney General of Texas, from taking any enforcement action under HB 1181 pending further order or final judgment.
Yep. So,
yeah.
Yep, that happened. But with that, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And, well, move on from the show proper to the proper show proper. And we had another celebrity death that happened, literally was announced today. Jimmy Buffett passed away this week. I think he was 76.
Yeah.
76 years old. And Jimmy Buffett, man, he was a musical part of my childhood, I think. Yeah. He was a very specific kind of singer-songwriter who had... He carved out like his own specific little subgenre of music. Basically, he was ostensibly a country western artist, but his music was incredibly, you know, inflected with, you know, beaches, tropical themes, you know, with tropical instruments and story, you know, stories about pirates and getting drunk on the beach and, you know, wanting a cheeseburger, stuff like that. And yeah, it's he had his most famous song was probably Margaritaville, which of course ended up becoming a well, his two famous songs actually were that and Cheeseburger in Paradise, both of which ended up sort of inspiring like businesses of their own that he helped, you know, found and direct. Yeah. And everything.
Like Margaritaville even became a musical.
Yep. And he kept on, you know, touring and recording right up until fairly recently. In fact, after his death, they announced that he had one more song that he had finished recording called My Gummy Just Kicked In.
yeah.
But yeah, I never got to see him in live, but I know some people who did. And apparently he was a great entertainer. Him and his band could, he was a great, like, he was great. Great live experience, and apparently he was a pretty nice all-around dude. So yeah.
Yeah. Big musician.
Yeah.
Maybe one that wasn't ever highly acclaimed.
He wasn't. He was considered really kitsch, to be honest.
Yeah.
But he did have his financial and chart success.
I feel like I hear the way that people talk about him, sort of like late Beach Boys.
Yeah.
Where it's like a lot of their songs, you know, pretty decent, but not compared to, you know, yeah, their heyday when they were competing with the Beatles and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. It was like Kokomo, like that kind of stuff, where it's like Kokomo is being pretty good, but that's also because that was probably the first one of their songs I heard, and it got tied into a Muppets music video kind of thing.
Yeah, and also, you know, like after that, then they record, you know, probably one of the worst albums ever made.
Yeah.
That's the one where they had John Stamos on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he's like one of those people that is known for his hits and probably not any albums.
Yeah.
Whereas probably his greatest hits album is probably his most popular album.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, so it's sad, but you know, he lived a full life and he set out to do what he did, and he was successful for it. So
yeah.
But, yeah. All right. So, and now to move on to the rest of the proper show proper, which is, we now know that former President Donald J. Trump's DC trial has been set for March 4th, 2024, right before Super Tuesday.
Yeah. So congratulations.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the one that's taking place in DC. They are hoping for the New York trial to also be set around the same time. So they're trying to make sure they're not going to be, you know, conflicting too much there. The Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg previously said he would be flexible in that case as long as the judges agreed.
Yeah.
So they may move that one a little bit if need be. But yeah, it's going to be right in the shitstorm of trials interfering with the primary for the GOP, which the GOP wants to act like, oh, this just makes Trump stronger. And it's like, I don't know about that. Maybe for Trump's base, it'll be okay. But for everybody else, I don't see how it's not going to poison things.
Yeah.
Outside of people are just contrarians trying to act like Biden hasn't done anything good.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I always have to remind people, contrarianism is not a good substitute for a personality or intelligence for that matter.
Or a political party.
Or anything, really. Next up, now here's a bit of a blast from the past. So back around the 2008 presidential cycle that would eventually, you know, go into the 2012 presidential cycle and would be sort of the foundations of what would eventually be the Tea Party, which largely doesn't exist anymore. It got kind of grandfathered into MAGA, whatever. There was a guy, you may have heard of him, that called himself Joe the Plumber. Now, here's two things you need to know about Joe the Plumber. One, his name wasn't Joe. It was Samuel Wurzelbacher. Second, he wasn't a plumber.
No. He was like a tech dude?
Yeah, he was like a tech dude. And he became like this, for whatever reason, he became like a central figure in early Tea Party stuff. Well, he's passed away. He died of pancreatic cancer this week.
Yeah, 49.
Mm-hmm.
Though his son is Joe. So yeah. His oldest son. So that is a whole thing there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that sucks for him, but the whole political climate around his big turn is steeped in, you know, racism, lots of that shit. Cause you know, having the bald white guy confronting the first big black, candidate for president in a long time. Definitely not some symbolism there, especially when he started being buddy-buddy with John McCain and all that.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay. So, you know, kind of undermines a little bit of, like, if you remember the one clip of John McCain trying to calm down somebody at one of his speeches who's calling Obama Muslim and all that. And that kind of thing is like, yeah, he wasn't all about that. Because he helped push this guy a good bit to try and ruffle and, you know, interfere with the Democrats' campaign. So, yeah, he was definitely a big tool in the GOP's arsenal for that election. But luckily, it failed big time. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And so there is that. And we got another political story. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise was diagnosed with a treatable form of blood cancer.
Yeah, it's another thing where it sucks for him, but also he's a terrible person. So he'll deal with it.
Yeah.
I assume he has to go through chemo for this as well. Which definitely is going to be ironic when the GOP was very mad that, what was his name, Jamie Rankin, who wanted to keep wearing the bandana around his head when he was, you know, bald from going through chemo, that kind of thing. It's like, oh, how's that going to handle here? They're going to, you know, the GOP is going to be just fine with it in a way that's like, yeah, see, this is your contrarianism making you look like assholes in hindsight. Where it's, you know, rules for thee, but not for me. Kind of shit there. He's also the guy that got shot in the ass at the congressional baseball game.
Yeah.
And still opposed gun legislation.
Yeah, afterwards. But, yeah, so that has happened. And now we get the bigger stories of this week. Hurricane Idalia caused a lot of destruction as it hit, you know, my corner of the country. But luckily, not many people died. Like I said, we didn't really get much of it. It was mostly south of us. Although we did get a lot of rain. We did get that. But like right around the coastal regions of Georgia and, of course, Florida itself, yeah, they got the brunt of it.
Yeah. It's another case of, you know, climate change is going to keep causing these sort of eclectic storms. This one, luckily, I think it was briefly a Category 4, but before it hit the coast of Florida, it turned into a Category 3 and sort of quickly lost a lot of steam there, but still managed to flood and damage a lot of small towns in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
There in the like northern panhandle area there between Jacksonville and Tallahassee. So you kind of get a lot of stuff there. It seems like they're still potentially dealing with power outages down there. So luckily you're in like the northern part of the state of Georgia. So you missed the bulk of it.
Yeah.
But still not without risks or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And during that point, during the storm, it apparently upended a tree and threw it at the governor's mansion.
Yeah. Which I don't believe he was in there.
No, he wasn't.
Unfortunately.
Okay.
But yeah, that's, I think it was like one person that died in Florida that they were investigating. They weren't sure if it was directly a result of the storm or some other thing that was going on. And like maybe one person in Georgia, luckily not too many others as far as I can see. So that's great. They got lucky. Cause it didn't seem to really hit any big population areas directly, at least. But yeah, a lot of people lost businesses and homes and such. But those things can be replaced. So Florida now, it's very hard to get insurance down there unless you're rich.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like this climate change thing keeps making hurricanes constantly hit the place and cause a lot of destruction.
Yeah.
And insurance companies don't seem to like that for some reason.
No. I mean, insurance companies by themselves will already do everything they possibly can to try and not pay you.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that just makes it worse.
Yeah. It's a bad place to be, and obviously DeSantis isn't doing much to alleviate that for people.
Yep. Yeah. Speaking of which, Canada has updated its travel advisory to the United States, warning Canadian citizens who are of the LGBTQ plus community about some of the state laws they may be subject to if they go there.
Yeah.
That's where we've gotten, unfortunately.
Yeah, I guess they did not specify which states, but is advising travelers to check the local laws for their destination before traveling. Saying here, since the beginning of 2023, certain states in the U.S. have passed laws banning drag shows and restricting the transgender community from access to gender-affirming care and from participation in sporting events.
Yeah.
Outside Canada, laws and customs related to sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, and sex characteristics can be very different from those in Canada. As a result, Canadians could face certain barriers and risks when they travel outside Canada. Let's see. They say no Canadians in the U.S. have complained to Global Affairs of how they were treated or kept from expressing their opinions about LGBTQ plus issues. Mm-hmm. So that's at least good. But yeah, it's not a thing that's certain anytime soon.
Yeah. But now this is an interesting bit of news here. So archaeologists in Turkey have identified some massive structures below a Roman-era castle. Now, for those who don't know, the Roman Empire at one time did extend into Turkey and past it. And in fact, its capital, well, its second capital, Constantinople, which is modern-day Istanbul, was located there after Emperor Constantine decided to move it there. This is sort of getting an idea of, like, pre-Roman civilizations.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of what was once ancient Mesopotamia, Turkey has long been fertile grounds for archaeologists It's home to significant sites that even predate Mesopotamia, as UNESCO World Heritage sites such as Göbekli Tepe, a Neolithic settlement believed to be more than 10,000 years old, what may be the world's oldest place of worship, and Kadalholyik, a proto-city dating back some 9,000 years. Some of that stuff. But now, more recent sites in the country's southeast are yielding finds that archaeologists say may change modern understanding of this part of the world's past. Moving the footprint of pre-Roman activity in the area further east than was previously believed. Zerzavan Castle, the site of a Roman Empire military garrison, is providing what UNESCO calls important information about the Roman soldiers, civilians, daily lives, and the battles. Then there's the Mithras Temple. The Mithras religion, also known as the Mithras cult, is believed to have originated in ancient Persia. The temple discovered in 2017 is possibly the best preserved such temple in the world. Yet to be excavated are huge multi-story structures that archaeologists have identified thanks to ground penetrating radar scans. These remain below ground and are revealing layer upon layer of artifacts, some dating back well into pre-Roman history. And yeah, sitting near an ancient church built on a high hill high above the temple, they say the first time an archaeologist saw the place, he knew he had to excavate. Yeah, some stuff here. Underground residential areas may have sheltered 10,000 people in wartime. So yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff here, pictures and such. Definitely worth a read if you want to learn some more here. But it seems really cool what they're finding here.
Yeah. The Mithra stuff in particular is interesting. Because, you see, the thing is about the Mithraic religion and stuff is we don't have any idea what their actual tenets were. Pretty much everything that we know about it has been more or less, you know, it deciphered through, you know, the artifacts and, like, the old temples and stuff that people can find. You know, we have no idea what their beliefs were, or their, you know, what their rituals were. Just about everything is completely subjective. So yeah, maybe they'll find some more information this time around. This next one is especially interesting and heartening too. There was a women's volleyball game that happened in Nebraska that set the world wet record for women's sports attendance.
This is a thing that is kind of a quiet secret here in the U.S. that's women's volleyball is huge.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen the Big Ten was sort of surprised to find out that it was one of their biggest, you know, ratings getters on their network. That kind of thing. So, yeah, they had a sport in or an event held in Nebraska's Memorial Stadium, where their football stuff is played. They just lay down a court and all that. They do that with basketball stuff for the Final Four for men's basketball and women's basketball. They do that. But yeah, they had 92,003 fans that watched the five-time NCAA champion Nebraska volley team beat Omaha 3-0. Yeah, which is surprising because the they broke the previous world record for women's sports attendance, which was 91,648, set in Barcelona, Spain, for a Champions League match between FC Barcelona and Wolfsburg. So, yeah, you would expect, like, women's football would be the best in the world, but unfortunately it's women's volleyball. And, yeah, when you can find some good matches of that stuff, it's really good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So there's that. Now we're moving on to the entertainment portion of the show. So after that, some of you probably know Taylor Swift. She's going on tour again. And of course, anybody who knows that whenever Taylor Swift goes on tour, the tickets basically sell out within like a nanosecond of the announcement. But the good news is fans who are unable to get tickets to her Eras Tour shows can see it in theaters on October 13th.
Yeah. They're doing a screening of a film of one of the stops. I'm not sure which one it is in particular. But yeah, this is a big deal because I I've seen that AMC has one of the chains that is doing it. They're also doing it Cinemark and Regal screens.
Mm-hmm.
That they are going, or they set a record for pre-sale for tickets with $26 million sold already just for one chain's tickets. So that's a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And basically anybody that can is paying to see this,
mm-hmm.
whether it's tickets to go to the actual shows or people going to these showings.
Mm.
And yeah, some of them are committing to do like multiple showings a day, kind of try to get as much out of it as they can, which makes a lot of sense there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, more ways, and hopefully that does get like a release on some streaming service, maybe even Blu-ray release.
Oh yeah. Sounds, let's hope so. But yeah, so that's happening. And now for a little bit of just a bit of entertainment business bullshit. Despite finishing the series based on the Spiderwick Chronicles, Disney is refusing to air it. And I have a couple of guesses why, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. It seems like part of this is that they don't want to pay for any royalties or any of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Despite spending all the money to make it, they are looking to shop it off to other potential buyers.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, series is also made in conjunction with Paramount and 20th Century Television, which is Fox. So there's other things here, but it's a 6-episode series. And, you know, it's a book series that's, you know, pretty well regarded for kids.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this was announced about 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
as part of a Disney Plus day that year. And just shows the weird penny pinching, you know, min-maxing nature of studios these days, that they spend all this money and time making this and have decided that it's not worth their the effort to even put it on their servers for people to watch,
mm-hmm.
as they're just shipping it off to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I assume somebody will take that, maybe a Peacock or a Paramount Plus that would like something notable on their service.
Mm.
So yeah, that's kind of seems to be the gist of it here.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, the writer does not have any rights, no control over any of this.
Because
I think, because they made like a movie or two of this, didn't they?
I'm pretty sure they did.
Yeah, so Disney probably, 2008.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first one, at least. I don't know if there was a sequel to that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is unsurprising.
Mm.
And yeah, this is that was a Nickelodeon movie. So that's where Paramount part of it comes in. Disney probably paid them some money to help them out with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's unsurprising. And yeah, the author of the books kind of gets to sit on the sidelines and not be able to benefit from any of this that's going on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's no show. It's not been put out. So why would they get money?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
This is how far these studios will go to not pay for this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's, you know, this is one of the reasons why, you know, the strikes are happening. Because they can basically just make people do all this work and then just shelve it as a tax write-off. You know, it sucks. But we also found out this week that Peacock is getting an animated park Lego special, which, man, there's a lot of shenanigans I can think of that they could have with that one.
Yeah, Lego Jurassic Park, the unofficial retelling, 22-minute special will stream on there this fall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the poster is even recreated with Legos.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they're having some fun with this. Yeah, it's part of a year-long 30th anniversary celebration of the original Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. To show you how long that movie, how old that movie is now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good to see. It could be neat.
Yeah.
Especially as they kind of condense that movie into 22 minutes as a kid-friendly thing.
Yeah. And as this is all going on, we have a strike. Well, Adam Driver actually came out and he called on the AMPTP. He basically called them out for refusing to meet the actors' demands to stop the strike. Like,
yeah. Yeah, he was doing a press conference for Ferrari, which we'll talk about here in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
The new Michael Mann movie, which is being published by Neon. Mm-hmm. So they're not one of the big studios, so they kind of get waivers on this stuff to do this. So Adam Driver was at the Venom Film Festival. Yeah, and basically said, I'm very proud to be here to be a visual representation of a movie that's not part of the AMPTP and to promote the SAG leadership directive, which is an effective tactic, which is the interim agreement. He also continued, the other objective is obviously to say, why is it that a smaller distribution company like Neon and STX International can meet the dream demands of what SAG is asking for?
Yeah.
This is pre-negotiations, the dream version of SAG's wish list. But a company like Netflix and Amazon can't.
Mm-hmm.
Every time people from SAG go and support a movie that has met the terms of the interim agreement, mm-hmm. it just makes it more obvious that these people are willing to support the people that they collaborate with and others are not.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just tore them apart because
mm-hmm.
it's shown just how much those companies are in sort of infinite growth mode that... Yeah. Yeah, you know, they need to get as much money out of it as possible, and
yeah,
they're willing to cut off their nose and
spite
their ears and all that to spite the actors and the writers.
Yeah, and you know another company, A24, they've made deals with the union and everything, and it's like, you know, they can do it. It's like what's stopping these others? They've got so much money, they could easily part with a little bit of it. And they're, to be honest, the people in the strikes aren't even asking for a whole lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyway, we got a couple of trailers to talk about here. First and foremost, we got a teaser trailer for the newest film from Michael Mann. It's called Ferrari. It is about Enzo Ferrari, the former F1 driver who would go on to found the Ferrari luxury sports car manufacturer.
Yeah.
And the sort of various turmoil he was going through in the early 50s. Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of in the middle of their brand as part of the Formula One mm-hmm. Early in the late 50s. So dealing with all the familial drama as well as the stuff going on with the racing brand and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Driver, Penelope Cruz, Shailene Woodley, bunch of people in here
mm-hmm.
that are good. So, seems like it should be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be out. Do they have a date? They don't list it here. Let me see if it's at the end of this thing. Christmas. Okay, so... Mm-hmm. That makes it easy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and last but not least, we got a official teaser trailer for The Killer, which is looks like a crime action thriller.
Yeah.
An assassin who decides he's going to kill his employers. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a David Lynch film, his newest one.
I'm like, wow, and which you know what that means.
Yeah. It's, I believe the screenwriter is also the one from Fight Club. So,
yep,
you kind of get the vibes of some of that stuff here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's Michael Fassbender and some other people in this. I'm trying to see who else is in here. Yeah, Fassbender seems to be the big one. But you got who else is in here? I'm not sure who these. Cary O'Malley. Sala Baker, Sophie Charlotte, Tilda Swinton.
Mm.
So, got some talent there. So, that'll be out November 10th
mm-hmm.
in select theaters and also on Netflix. So,
yeah,
you can check that one out.
Yeah. And, yeah, so I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks. Yes, we do. We got ourselves a show. So I'd like to remind all of our listeners, you got a question, comment, or something once we're on the air, get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of podcast I think of. So, yeah, we're going to go ahead and wind it down here for tonight. If you enjoyed what we've been yapping about and enjoyed what you heard, please do not hesitate to talk about us to your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, or even just random strangers on the street, because they may end up hating you, but they may end up liking us. So, yeah, we're going to go ahead and end it here. Thank you once again, Chris, for joining me once again on this little adventure. And I am going to go ahead and shut down here so I can go and start playing some Baldur's Gate 3. No smart little quip here to end it all with. It's just I really, really want to play Baldur's Gate 3, and I'm finally going to get a chance to do it tonight. So, as far as I'm concerned, the rest of the world can burn. Good night, everybody.